Great. Yeah, good afternoon. Hope we are not getting too scary or too unimportant in comparison to other classes. Are there questions? No? The final exam you have, it will be due next week, Tuesday, at the start of when the regular exam would, or the scheduled exam will happen. You can obviously hand it in earlier if you want to. Basically, I will go after the regularly scheduled exam, I will go to my mailbox and pick up what is there. If you want to hand it in last moment. The qualifier exam then is on the Tuesday next week at, 4:10 here in this room. For the qualifier exam, you can bring your notes, you can bring, the textbook in, these PDF notes. Notes includes if you want to bring your homework or anything, that's fine. You can bring a calculator or computer or tablet or so. What I just would ask you is that during the exam you put it in airplane mode or turn off the Wi-Fi or so, just to make sure there is no communication and no look up for stuff outside.
You listed about 6-ish textbooks on the syllabus.
Yes.
Can we bring PDFs of those too?
If you want. If you want, but then you should offer everyone else in the class a copy of the PDF if they want it.
Okay.
Are some of your problems maybe from some of those sources sometimes?
Yes. Yes. But I don't think the ones on the final, but but that's fine. And what I want to see in both of the final exams is that you show that you can use the tools we introduced in class to work on problems. The idea is not that there is calculation, which is hard, but that something sensible is done. I would like to see if a calculation is done, that a bit text is there which indicates that it doesn't just say, if the problem is how many ways is there to arrange this, that it just says 15 plus 3 plus 7 is 25, but a bit text where the 15, 3 and 7 come from. You have a question?
No. Sorry.
That's fine. Yes, and the qualifier exam obviously will be a bit shorter than the take-home final because you have less time. It will not be horrendously different in style.
Or content?
Or type of questions. But it also will not be a complete duplicate. Any question? And I mean, with a take-home final, I'm very happy to answer questions in class. It's just once class is over on Friday, I would prefer to only, at that point, I can only really answer technical things. My page 3 is blank, what was written on there, or Just for fairness reasons that everyone has the same thing. So please look at the questions before once if you are worried that something could go wrong.
Dude, I think I need to go print a page problem 4, right?
What?
There is a problem 4.
Yes,
right? Okay.
Yes, there is.
I need to remember to print that.
Do you want
to
see it?
No.
Wait, did you not get it?
Yeah, it goes 3-5.
Yeah,
mine does too.
Oh, did something go wrong in the
something
copier?
You should omit problem 4, actually. That's one of the ones
so
I haven't solved yet.
Did you get problem 4?
Well, I looked it up. I'm using the online company.
Okay.
I
knew there was a problem. Why is it?
Not a big deal. We can print it off.
Yeah, print. I mean, the PDF is on the. I have no idea what happened there. I mean, it. I didn't check in part because the PDF is on there. It's numbered. I didn't go through and check the pages that no two sheets stuck together.
Yeah, I just thought I'd mention it in case.
Yeah, no, there is a problem for.
It's a Latin square problem.
Yes.
Maybe for you.
It's not
is
that.
Is it a group of CSU grad students?
No, this is, I mean, the Latin square is just as a struct to have some kind of structure with which to make a problem. This is basically, if I remember correctly, this is a problem about the marriage theorem.
Oh. I did something with tableaus, which I wanted to ask you about, because it looked cool.
It is. I'm not ruling out that this is, but I seem to remember that the idea over there was to use the marriage problem.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? No? So, So what we have done last time is we looked at the, well, first we looked at the reverse process to RSK, and now to analyze what is happening if we switch the two tableaus, what to show that corresponds to the inverse permutation, we defined the bumped tableau, the bumped array. So, if we start with a two-line array, so for example, let's say we have, just to have one where the numbers are not consecutive, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, and we have 5, 2, 3, 6, 4. How do we define the bumped array? We go through the process, so if this is the array A, and we want the bump array, what we're doing is we're going through the RSK process, so we're inserting 5, we're placing 1 here, we are inserting 2 bumps 5 out, so the 5 gets placed here, and we put a 2 there. So, what, oh not 2, a 3, sorry.
3 below.
Because that's,
and then the 3 should be below it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You're completely right. Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much. What I will now do is for the bumped array, in the top row, I write the entry of the top row when a bumping happened. So this is 3. And in the bottom row, I write the bumped entry. So bumped was 5. Next comes a 3.
You said the three correspond to where the bump happened?
Well, the top row corresponds to the top row entry when the bump happens.
Okay.
And the bottom entry is the bump entry. And so next is I insert a 3, which gets placed here. I insert a 6. The 6 gets placed here. And I insert a 4.
Doesn't
the
6 go
with
the...
I put it next to the
3.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, yeah. Right, that goes here. Right, and now I come with a 4. The 4 bumps out the 6, which then goes here. And that's at step 9. So the other bumped one is a 4, which is at the step which is labeled by 9.
6, the got bumped?
Yeah.
Oh, right, the 6 got bumped. Yeah.
Before you did the bumping.
Thank you. Okay, and that's also what I have here. Yes, that's the... So, what this... And if we now look at the process, how the tableaus are built, then the bumped two-row array simply corresponds to rows 2 and below of the two tableaus. Right? Because... What will happen if we now would go through the bumped array? Well, the entries I'm inserting are the entries which have been bumped into the second row and probably later on get bumped further, but they get only bumped by something which needs to come into the second row. So this tells us what goes in the second row and below, and the entries in the top row tell us the entries which would go in the other tableau at that stage. So, the bumped two-row array, a bump corresponds by the RSK correspondence to rows 2 and below of the tableaus. So,
how do we do the recording for the bumped two-row array if multiple bumps happen in the same step? So if we try to insert a...
I simply care what gets bumped out of the first row.
Okay.
I don't worry. In some way, what I'm doing is, you could imagine, I do the process and keep this really as a waiting room. I'm not writing things out. I'm just caring... Here are things, this is tableau limbo, you've been kicked out of the first row, and now at some point you'll get in the second row or something further, but it will, the numbers will keep that sequence as they are processed there. And that's basically, the reason for this is to say, with this concept of the bumped two-row array, we only need to analyze the first row. We don't need to analyze all the rows. So, for analyzing the first row, I now want to define a property. So, a column QIPI of the two-row array of A is in class T. Okay, I want to give it some label, and where I copied it from, it said he calls it in class T. You could give it some other name where T is an integer. If after inserting p1 up to pi minus 1 into an empty, inserting up to pi into an empty tableau, then PI, well, if I insert these numbers one after the other into an empty tableau, the last number I insert will always be in the first row, right? Either I add it at the end of the first row, or it bumps something out of the first row and then it sits itself in the first row. So then PI is in column T. So the class tells me, based on the P entry, the second row of the entries, in which column of the first row does this number sit when I insert it? So, for example, this, the 5, sits in class 1, right? Because when I inserted it in the first row, it was in the first column. The 2 also sits in class 1 because it bumped the 5 out. The 3 sits in class 2. The 6 sits in class 3. And the 4 also sits in class 3. Okay. And now I want to characterize class. So this gets lemma 541. So QI PI belongs to class T. Well, you can argue, why do I associate it to the column and not just to the entry in the second row? Because I really want to associate the index with it, the index at which it happens. And otherwise, I need that makes the notation slightly easier. This is in class T, if and only if T is the length of the longest increasing subsequence PI1 smaller PI2 smaller and so forth smaller PIT, which would be PI. So this longest increasing subsequence ending at PI. Okay. So the longest increasing subsequence ending in this 5 clearly is just 5. Longest increasing ending here with a 2 is just 2 itself. Here I can have the sequence 2, 3. Here I can have the sequence 2, 3, 6. Yes, I also could have 5, 6, but that doesn't matter. And I could have here the sequence 2, 3, 4. Right. So why does this hold? And this is, again, basically a text argument. So suppose this column lies in class T. By definition of class T, that means PI is inserted in the T-th column, right? So, to be insertable in the T-th column, there need to be entries in columns 1 up to T minus 1 before. Right? So, if there are, because otherwise I can only add at the end, I can't skip things. If there aren't entries in columns 1 up to T minus 1 before in the sequence. I cannot put it into column T. So there needs to be a subsequence of length at least T. Why can't there be a subsequence? Why does this need to be the longest one? Well, if there was a longer subsequence of length than T, what would happen? I would put the entries of that subsequence in the first, when they are put in the first row of the tableau. And it doesn't really matter whether these entries are bumped out or not. When they are bumped out, this is just saying, oh, I could take another subsequence. They are replaced by a number which is slightly smaller, but still larger than the number before. Oh, no, this wouldn't necessarily be a subsequence. No, that is rubbish. No, but they are, I'm placing these numbers, and if they get bumped out, I will replace them with numbers which are actually slightly smaller. So it will still be when the last entry, or when an entry is put into the column T, if there was a longer subsequence, what would happen? Which is increasing. I would put the first entry of this subsequence into column 1. Something might happen, it might get bumped out, but the second entry of that sequence comes. That second entry of the sequence is larger than the entry, well, it's larger than the first entry of the sequence because it's an increasing subsequence, but therefore it is in particular larger than the entry which then is in the first position. Because by bumping, entries only get smaller, right? So the second entry of the subsequence would be put in column 2. By the same end argument, the third entry of the subsequence will be larger than the entry which then is in the second column of the first row. So it will be placed in the third column, or actually, if it's not a maximal sequence, it could be placed even later, but it will be placed at least in the third column. Maybe bumping something out, but I don't care about this. So, by that argument, if there was an increasing subsequence of length more than T ending in PI, PI would be needed to be placed in column beyond T. Right? Is this argument clear, or do you want me to go through once more? So, if it is placed into column T, the length of the longest increasing subsequence ending in that value which I'm placing must be length P. It cannot be less, because otherwise there aren't enough elements to put it into column T. It cannot be longer, because then I need to put it in column after T. And since I'm putting every entry first in the first row, that is the proof of a theorem. Okay. So, I don't think there is really, well, you can try to write down a proof with a lot of symbols, which doesn't really help you much with understanding. So I think this is one of the cases where the proof basically has to be text. So in particular, what we get from this is a corollary. If we look at the last entry, which is put in the first row, or the length of the first row, well, the length of the first row tells us some entries are put into that column. If the first row has length T, there are elements in class T and not in class T plus 1. So, the length of the first row equals length of the longest increasing subsequence of the sequence of the PIs. So we get from that as an interpretation what actually measures the first length. If we ask how does the shape of the tableau arise? Well, the first row, the length of the first row is the length of the longest increasing subsequence, or a longest, there might be several of the same length, of a longest increasing subsequence. Great. Then what happens with this? Actually, we could get an argument also for the length of the other rows, because the other rows are obtained, second row and so forth, are obtained from the bumped tableau. What is the second row of the bumped tableau? That is simply the length. This is taking out the entries which end up in the first row. So I take out these entries which are in some way the longest increasing subsequence, where I pick numbers at the latest possible point when they occur. Right? Because what ends up in column 1 of row 1 is the last entry in class 1. What ends up in column 2 is the last entry in class 2. What ends up in column 3 is the last entry in class 3. So I'm taking these entries. If I remove them, then I would have 5 and 6 left. That's the second row of the bumped tableau. And now I could iterate that argument. Bumped two-row array. The bumped two-row array is a two-row array which describes row 2 and so forth of the two tableaus. So the length of the second row of the original tableau is the length of the first row of the bumped tableau. So it's the length of the longest increasing subsequence in the bumped tableau, and so forth. So what the length of second, third row, and so forth tell me are length of longest increasing subsequence after I take a longest out, and then the second longest out, and so forth. That's what describes the shapes of these tableaus. So it is telling something about possibly longest increasing subsequences. And indeed, if I have if the tableau has shape just one row, then everything needs to be a longest increasing subsequence. If the tableau vice versa has shape just one column, I can have a longest increasing subsequence only of length 1. Then I have the reverse permutation. Okay. So that is class and interpretation of class. So what I now want to do is as a goal towards finally proving the theorem, is to look at a way which had a slightly different way of describing the tableau. So far, what I have done is I have described the RSK correspondence as a correspondence where I take a two-row array, I go through in sequence of these entries, I insert them one by one, and I write the entries in the other tableau there. Okay. I want to look now at the inverse permutation, which in some way would say I switch the two rows of this two-row array and I sort, right? That would give me the inverse, sort according to the first row. That would give me the inverse permutation. But when I'm sorting, I'm changing the order. So swapping the rows corresponds nicely to swapping the two tableaus. That is nice. But what is there with sorting? The sorting somehow is not an operation which... I mean, we haven't even defined the process for tableaus or for two-row arrays if the first row is not sorted. So, what I therefore want to do is I want to look at a different way of describing this process where I'm not assuming that they are sorted, but where I'm using the class as extra information. So, in some way it would be, or if you want, it's then a three-row array. So I have the entries, have these pairs of entries and the associated class. And what I want to show is that if I have that information, that describes the pairs of tableaus. And what I now just need to do is I need to say, I can say, if I'm inverting the permutation, I'm swapping these two rows, I need to show that the class stays the same. And then I have that this will, because the numbers are just switched, that will produce the tableaus. So that's the plan. Okay. So for that, let's consider the columns in one particular class. Let's say I have Qi1, Pi1, Qi2, Pi2, and unfortunately need to use double indexing because the indices are necessarily 1, 2, 3, which they are, up to Qik. P-I-K. Let's assume these are all the columns in one particular class. So, by them being in the same class, that means I can arrange, we can achieve by reindexing that Qi1 is smaller than Qi2 and so forth is smaller than Qik, and vice versa, the reverse relation on the P. So I have Pi1 is greater than Pi2 and so forth is greater than Pik. Okay. Why can I do this? Well, First, so I'm just looking at the columns. I know they're all in the same class. So, if they're in the same class, I can certainly arrange them and arrange my indices so that it is sorted by the cues. Right? So, to achieve this inequality, that is for free. That is just a bookkeeping. That is without loss of generality on the choice of the indices. But what does this now tell me about the p's? Well, that means pi1 is the first entry of these, which I inserted into the first row. And pi2 is the second entry I inserted into the first row. Right? I mean, the second of these. There are other numbers in between. But of these in the class, in the same class, I inserted pi2 as the second one. Well, what does the class tell me? If it's class T, it tells me pi1 was put into column T of the first row. pi2 is put into column T of the first row. But there was already pi1. So the only way I can put it there is by pi2 bumping out pi1. Right? And actually, I don't even need that this is the full class. It's sufficient if it's a subset of those in the same class. But that means pi2 has to bump out pi1, or has to bump out something which bumped out pi1. And that means it needs to be smaller than pi1. And so forth. And pi3 will bump out pi2. So, if I have the set of columns in one class, then I can assume, I can index the entries in a way that these two inequalities hold. Okay. That's the first observation. Right. Next, let's look at the first row of column of the tableau P. What are the entries in the first row of So first row column T, at the end of the process, which entry do I have there? Well, it has to be a P entry which is in class T, because otherwise it can't end up in column T in the first row. Well, but which of the ones in there? It has to be the smallest one, right? Because I know if I just have them in the class, they must have come through in that order, so that the Q part was ordered to be increasing. And if the Q part is ordered increasing, the P part is ordered decreasing. So, what we get is as a next observation. So if you want, that is node 1. Two, the entry ending up in column T of row 1 at the end must be the smallest pi of those in class T. And therefore, what is the associated Q entry? The Q entry is the one entry I'm putting in the Q tableau. The associated Q entry, therefore, is the largest. Okay. So, what this tells me is if I have a tableau, sorry, if I have a two-row array, I only look at the columns and I look at the classes with the columns in whatever order I want, and I look at the classes, I can determine the first row of the resulting tableaus by only looking at the classes and within each class at the entries. Namely, in column T of the first row, look at all the columns which are in class T, look at their smallest P entry, that's the one which will end up in the P tableau, look at their largest Q entry, that will be the entry in the Q tableau. Okay, so that is P, that is the first row. And then the next thing is to look at the bumped array and to look at that if we switch the two rows, the classes are preserved. Okay, so that's the place where I want to